This summer's must-read mystery is Meredith Adamo's Not Like Other Girls. A girl's search for her missing classmate digs up dangerous secrets in this unputdownable feminist thriller, perfect for fans of Veronica Mars and A Good Girl's Guide to Murder.
You're listening to Washington Post Live's First Look podcast with Jonathan Capehart.
Welcome to First Look, Washington Post Live's one-stop shop for news and analysis. I'm Jonathan Capehart, associate editor at The Washington Post. Nearly 10 years after the murder of 20 children at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, the nation is shocked again, this time over the killing of 19 children at an elementary school in Texas. Then, as now, there are pleas for gun safety legislation. Nothing happened then, but will something happen now? Let's ask Mariana Sotomayor, congressional reporter at The Washington Post. Mariana, welcome back to First Look.
Thanks for having me.
So, is Congress considering enacting any new gun safety laws after this latest massacre?
They are considering it, but whether something happens is the question. You know, a lot of reporters waking up on Wednesday, kind of recapping the day that was on Tuesday and asking that same question. We have been here before. We have seen Congress, especially senators, try and come together, hash out a deal, but the, you know, policies of the right, policies of the left have kind of prevented them from being able to find a resolution. Not that that hasn't existed in the past, it just has made it difficult with some of the margins that we've seen on the House side and on the Senate side to actually be able to pass legislation. Of course, the Senate is really where all the attention is because that's where you can get those 10 Republican senators possibly on a potential deal. This does feel different, though. I think, you know, just how many people, many Americans were shocked. We've seen many mass shootings, but it just hits differently when you see so many kids get shot and killed in a situation like this. And that tone has definitely mobilized a number of senators who, you know, have tried to get to the negotiating table before, but just haven't in recent days. And some people who are actually motivating that conversation are, of course, Senator Chris Murphy, who was a member of the House representing Newtown, Connecticut, when Sandy Hook happened almost 10 years ago. And you've also seen Senator Mitch McConnell, the minority leader in the Senate, actually tell Senator John Cornyn, hey, you kind of have my blessing to start negotiating with Democrats. So you are seeing a bipartisan group come together. They had their first meeting yesterday to kind of just talk things out. And someone who was in that room, of course, Senator Joe Manchin, and I think his feeling actually encapsulated where many senators are. He told reporters, you know, I just can't stop thinking about my own grandkids. I can't stop thinking about my grandkids. And that is a lot of where members, senators are thinking, maybe it's time to do something.
That was a terrific encapsulation of everything that's happening. And yet I find myself going back to those days after Newtown when we had never seen anything like that before, a mass shooting of children at an elementary school. And folks then thought, this is it. This is the moment where Congress is going to move. Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, trying to hammer out, I believe it was a background checks law, and they couldn't even get that done. So, Mariana, my question is, given that the Senate now is on recess, a Memorial Day recess until June 6th, will all those feelings, all those moves by McConnell, by Manchin, by Chris Murphy, who is the one who's really driving this effort, will the momentum behind all of that still be there by the time they come back on June 6th?
A lot of people are hoping so, but they know, again, different scenario, very politicized issue, things have tended to just kind of dissipate. There does seem, again, to be this feeling of urgency, but that could possibly lessen as the days goes on. You've seen a number of House Democrats in particular pushing leadership and telling them, hey, I don't care about my Memorial Day recess. We should all be coming back and trying to negotiate, try and package together something to make sure that that momentum does not go away. And, you know, privately and even publicly, you've heard many senators and members of Congress since Sandy Hook, there's been so many mass shootings on different scales. And privately, they've said, you know, if we can't, if we couldn't pass gun reform when 20 little kids were murdered in Newtown, Connecticut, I don't think we're going to be able to address the issues at hand with this shooting and that shooting. So there is also that feeling of, yeah, we couldn't do it then. But there is some feeling of regret from some members that they weren't able to get it done that is fueling some of these renewed conversations.
Which stands a better chance of actually perhaps maybe even getting a vote? Is it something along the lines of a background checks law or red flag laws, or is it something else?
So those are two pieces of policy essentially that are under discussion. There have been numerous bills that have come forth to address background checks. They actually, two of them passed the House early last year, and they would close the Charleston loophole that would essentially, if we all remember the Charleston shooting, the gunman there was able to essentially get a gun that he purchased without a completed background check, because you can get a gun after 3 days. That the legislation currently would extend that time frame, I believe, to 10 days. There's also conversations of, you know, gun show loopholes, being able to make sure that people who buy either guns online at these gun shows would also get background checks. That, of course, those two bills never came up in the Senate. They are now under discussion, but there are some parts to those two pieces of legislation that Republicans don't necessarily like. They want to make sure, for example, that when it comes to the gun show loophole, they think it's a little too broad in the sense that, you know, family members should be able to sell arms to other family members. They would want to make sure that those caveats are there. But there are some senators like Pat Toomey, who is retiring, who would be open to, you know, some kind of gun show sales loophole, closing those loopholes. There's also those red flag laws. That's actually a conversation coming out more so on the House side that, you know, a lot of Democrats say that could help the Republican argument of, you know, this is just about mental health. Well, red flag laws would essentially allow family members as well as law enforcement officers to go to a court. There's discussions about, you know, do you go to a federal court? Can you go to a state court? Should states be able to implement these laws in the ways that they want? But it would essentially allow them to, if they're approved, to take arms away from mentally disturbed people, people who have just expressed changes in their character and their demeanor and pose a threat to themselves and others. So those are the kinds of things that are under discussion. Things like banning semi-automatic assault rifles, things like that. Democrats know, as much as they would want that to happen, it's just not going to bring Republicans to the table.
I mean, the time that we have left, let's talk about President Biden and the role he could possibly play in the negotiations. Dana, Hugh, welcome back to First Look.
Thank you, John. Good to see you, Jonathan.
So hours after the Uvalde, Texas shooting, and just after landing from his trip in Asia, President Biden addressed the nation. Let's listen.
Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Why do we keep letting this happen? Where in God's name is our backbone? To have the courage to deal with it and stand up to the lobbies. It's time to turn this pain into action.
I would love for each of you to give your reactions. Hugh, you go first. Your reactions to the president's words there.
Well, I think the president did his best to try and set the stage for some doable legislation. Your previous conversation, I think the doable thing is to combine the spending clause with an incentive for a red flag law that is constitutional in every state. And they passed in some places. They didn't work in Buffalo, where the killer at the supermarket didn't get the red flag he deserved. But the answer that I think a vast majority of Americans would support are more armed police at schools. It's expensive, but it's effective. I wanted to make sure that everyone reads the Matt Vespa column where he details 2021 Hinckley High School, 2018 Dixon High School, 2018 Grand Mills High School, 2018 Forest Hill High School, and 2013 Arapahoe High School. Police officers stop killers in the parking lot. We need more police in schools.
Dana?
Well, look, President Biden, I think, spoke for the pain of the nation, for the frustration of the nation. There is, I think, very little hope that we're going to see much of anything come out of this broken Senate. You know, I appreciate Hugh's notions of more police in schools, and indeed, maybe in certain circumstances that has helped. We've had, I believe, according to the Washington Post count, 320 school shootings since Columbine, and it's an awful time for our entire culture. I don't think what you can call happening right now in the Senate are negotiations. I think it's just a question of whatever the Republicans are going to say they will allow to happen, and that'll be where we go. It is abundantly clear that there is widespread public support in the United States for these red flag laws, not just the laws, but the actual enforcement of it, and Hugh is right on that, and in further background checks. Can't say I'm optimistic, but at least some people are making the right noises now.
You know, in the last segment with Mariana, Hugh, she was talking about how on the Hill, among the members, there seems to be this incident is different. The fact that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has tasked Senator John Cornyn of Texas to be at the table for these talks about what to do with regard to gun safety. And I'm just wondering, do you even think that any kind of deal on anything, no matter how small, can actually happen this time?
Well, I think Doug Ducey in Arizona came within one vote after Parkland passing a comprehensive and, I believe, constitutionally sound, they call it a stop order there, a severe threat order of protection, that would seek to require hearings to remove the possibility of guns from mentally disturbed people, mostly young. He failed by one vote. That's why I think combining with spending, the spending clause is what was used when America wanted to raise the drinking age to 21. And it was the spending clause. So you're not getting any highway money unless you raise the drinking age to 21, and it worked. The spending clause works, it's constitutional. I think if the idea is to marry red flag laws to constitutionally sound red flag laws, people are very, all the talk of gun control will lead more people to buy more guns this week. I'm not a gun owner and I never have been, but I know that people who buy guns always buy more guns when they hear gun control talked about. Narrowly drawn, constitutionally sound red flag laws married up with the funding to put police officers on campuses and hardened campuses will pass, I believe.
Dana, you had a column this week saying responsible adults are letting our babies down. How?
More than letting them down, they're letting them die. I mean, we're all talking, of course, about Uvalde this week, but I focused on the hearing over the infant formula, where you had the executive from Abbott overseeing that, refusing to acknowledge that there is a cultural problem in that company, despite the what the FDA called shocking lapses in their sanitation at this place, which has had problems with this bacteria going spotted numerous times at this plant, going back to 2019, beetles and larvae going back to 2010. And still sort of a very defensive company saying we can't definitively prove that the bacteria that has sickened and killed these infants came from our factory, which of course is besides the point given the serious lapses there to begin with. You know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that there's just a sense that our government is completely broken now and can't do anything about the most basic things. You know, the right has been so successful at wearing down regulation, defunding the FDA's food safety, and, you know, reducing inspections, We see this sort of thing happen. The FDA has asked for the authority to monitor the supply chain of essential things like baby formula, and has been denied that by Congress, basically because Congress can't enact anything. And now we see the same thing on gun control again and again, and it's rather sickening. And I think you know, there's a lot of anger out there in America, but I think there's even more despondency that we just our leaders do not have the capacity to react to these daily crises that we're now gripped by.
And we've been talking about the negotiations here at the federal level, the anger at the national level. And we saw what happened in Texas when the anger at the quote-unquote local level, the state level, bubbles over. I want to get your reaction, another reaction, this time to Democratic gubernatorial nominee Beto O'Rourke, who confronted Republican Governor Greg Abbott during a news conference on Wednesday, saying that Abbott was, quote, doing nothing to stop the next shooting. What your reactions to that, and how effective was it? Hugh, you go first.
Did you say me, Jonathan?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was disgusting what Beto O'Rourke did, politicizing that moment with parents in the room and law enforcement in the room. And I stand with the law enforcement officer from Uvalde, who called him an SOB for exploiting a moment of intense pain. At the same time, I want to go back to what Dana just said. If the problem is protecting, and I've, like Joe Manchin, I got a fourth grade grandchild, a second grade grandchild, and I got a double coupon grandchild day last Friday, 100 miles apart, but I, two new grandkids. I'm worried about this just like Joe Manchin is. I want to stay focused on school safety. I want to stay focused. I don't want to talk about the FDA today. Dana and I have some, I can talk to him forever about the FDA. But if the issue today is school safety, harden schools, put police officers on them, stay focused on the issue, do not politicize it and say, what can we do? Doug Ducey's report after Parkland was the most comprehensive surveying of educators, psychiatrists, psychologists, police officers that I have ever seen done. I would recommend it to everyone to go find it, done by a Republican in consultation with Democrats. It's a model for how one approaches the problem. We need to stay focused on schools, because we remember Sandy Hook, and now we remember Rob, we remember Columbine and Parkland. That's because the casualties there were astonishing and grotesque. And we have to stay focused on that, not on talking.
All right, Dana, I want to get your reaction. And yes, let's stay focused on schools. I want to push back on this idea that what Beto O'Rourke did was quote unquote disgusting, since he's a public servant and he was expressing the concern and outrage of the public. But also, we're now finding out, Dana, that the timeline that was originally given to the people in Uvalde and thus the nation is completely wrong, and that there are some serious questions. So to my mind, what Beto O'Rourke did was channeling the anger, very legitimate anger, of parents who we now have seen through video that's been aired on television, of parents pleading with law enforcement in real time to do something, and they didn't do anything. So all that to say, your reaction to what Beto O'Rourke did, and the reaction of those parents, given the conflicting timelines.
Well, look, I think if we're going to use words like disgusting, grotesque, let's apply that to the massacre in Uvalde. I think you can say that what Beto O'Rourke did is a stunt. That I've been covering stunts for a quarter century on both sides. I think there's been a lot of sort of saying, you know, the Democrats or the left are jumping in to politicize a shooting. And then at the same time, you're seeing Greg Abbott continuing with a fundraiser on the very night of that massacre. You're seeing the NRA open its convention with 14 acres of guns, as it boasts, in Houston, a few hours drive from Uvalde, with former President Trump, apparently with Abbott, with Ted Cruz, all continuing with this, 14-acre orgy of guns. So, I mean, there is a lot of politicizing. I I like to hear Hugh Hewitt talk about what he thinks, you know, something constructive could be on this. I think that's exactly where we need to be right now, is putting out ideas, any ideas that we can get somebody to do something rather than shouting each other. But I think Beto is speaking to a very legitimate rage and frustration. It's just despondency. I don't know that he should be heckling at news conferences. On the other hand, I don't know what else anybody can be doing now, since we just seem to have been shouting into a void since 1999 on this.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch gears and talk about some of the primaries that took place on Tuesday and zero in on Georgia, where the Trump-endorsed candidate for governor, David Perdue, lost by more than 50 points in his effort to oust the incumbent governor, Brian Kemp. So, Hugh, does this say more about the strength of Kemp or the weakness of Trump and Perdue?
Well, Brian Kemp's a very good governor and a very good candidate. He's been on my radio show. I like Brian. He was supported by Chris Christie, Doug Ducey, many other Republicans who want to support good governors doing good things. Also note the Secretary of State won handily and doesn't even have to face a primary. What it shows us is that President Trump's endorsement is worth about 10 points. That's what got Oz into the showdown with David McCormick. It's what got J.D. Vance the nomination in Ohio. But it also has an offsetting effect among the Republican base. Some people do not want the return of relitigating 2020. I am among them. I think that is crazy and a bad way to go about prosecuting the case against Democrats in 2022 and their election. I think the Republicans will win the House unless they fall into that trap. And everyone who believes like I did got a bunch of evidence on Tuesday night that relitigating 2020 is not the way to win an election in 2022.
And Dana, you had a column this week basically saying that Donald Trump is becoming an even more dangerous force in American politics. Talk more about that. Why?
Yeah, and I want to be careful and say, I don't think that Trump is weaker in the sense that, I mean, look, he's already won these primaries in the sense that, you know, we're all MAGA Republicans now in these Republican primaries. So in that sense, Donald Trump has already won the war. I think he may be losing his ability as a kingmaker, the ability to pick and choose candidates in Republican primaries. So that's where the weakness is coming. I don't think it's overall in terms of the force of Trumpism. That's as strong as it has ever been. But, you know, look, we had him on Truth Social, his would-be Twitter killer, which hasn't quite worked out, but, you know, sharing this notion of civil war, which, you know, you've heard, of course, from various groups on the right involved with the insurrection. You've heard it from some backbench lawmakers like Green and Cawthorn, but now you're hearing the former president invoke civil war. So that's what I mean, is if he perceives that he's losing his clout, he may become more desperate and more extreme and therefore more dangerous. We don't need a former president of the United States talking about the idea of civil war. It is, I think, a more of a real danger than most Americans would like to acknowledge. But it's not something we need the former president whipping up.
All right, we've got less than 2 minutes left. We got it real fast, Hugh, and hopefully Dana can squeeze you in. Herschel Walker, the football star, backed by Trump, and did win the Republican Senate primary in Georgia. He'll now face Democratic incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock in November. This race could determine the control of the Senate. Does Herschel Walker stand a chance? Some of the videos I've seen of late shows him not to be quite ready. I don't know, Hugh, real fast, and then Dana.
In Atlanta last fall, he got a learning curve as being a candidate, but I think he ought to run a Joe Biden campaign, stay off of the stage as much as possible, because the one thing I learned at that event, don't get between Herschel Walker and a Georgia Bulldog fan, because you're going to get run over. I think he's going to win handily.
Dana, real fast.
Look, it's very easy to say candidates like Mastriano in Pennsylvania and Herschel Walker, by conventional standards, would never win. But we have learned in this era that you never say never.
That is exactly true. Hugh Hewitt, Dana Milbank, we got to go. Thanks for coming back to First Look. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening. To always stay up to date with First Look, subscribe to Washington Post Live's First Look on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.